Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
I found those people and I related to them. I felt crazy and sad and dark. And I was like 13 or 14. Marilyn Manson was big. I was really into Smashing Pumpkins. Being goth then was something to identify with. It was like just plugging yourself into like a big group of friends and people who like the same stuff as you, like poetry and music and dressing up crazy and going to cemeteries.
When Crystal Marquez discovered the goth scene, she didn't just find her people. She found a whole new persona.
Being in the scene helped me think of myself as sexy and pretty. We did kind of have a goth look, wearing all black. We would do crazy makeup, you know, like all blue on your face or red. We would do like a sexy goth vampire.
And while girls like Crystal were in fishnets and makeup, the boys were busy coming up with their own creative ways to show their gothiness.
My new guys who like wore capes or different things. There was a guy we knew that we called Elf Boy because he would try to look like an elf and prance around like one.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil, and today we present a truly gothic Valentine's, the story of a girl who would become a goth and discover all the weird, magical, romantic possibilities that come with the territory.
I met Mark in one of my science classes. He wore eyeliner. He had like a devil's lock. He was super pale and had freckles and didn't really talk to anyone. Honestly, me and Mark only dated like 2 weeks, which seems so tiny now. And then he kind of just disappeared into the scene after that, and I didn't really see him. So I think that was kind of what drew me to that scene, because I missed him.
Here's Crystal sharing her goth romances on stage at the Oriental Theater in Denver.
The only thing I love more than goth music and wearing all black was my friend Mark. We were best friends, and he taught me how to apply eyeliner. And we dated for a little while. And I broke up with him for some idiotic reason. And still, I was convinced that he was my soulmate, and I had to convince him that I was his. So I spent the next few years on a tortured voyage to win him back. June 23rd, 1997. Today was quite an exciting and boring day. Daniel came over. He kind of reminded me of Mark, the way he talked. He's really good friends with Mark. Mark, his name makes me want to cry and laugh and smile all at the same time. Anyways, I saw Mark last Wednesday, June 18th, the day we got out of school. Me and Tanya went to Wednesday night downtown. We saw Merlin. I asked him if Mark or the other gothics were around. He pointed, and there was Mark with the others. Merlin said that Mark and the others were bitten by the celibate bug. Merlin looked at me and said, "You like him, don't you? You think Mark's fine, don't you?" I was thinking, gosh, is it that obvious how much I want him and miss him? I went to the carnival with Chrisanne, and we saw Teresa there. She was saying how much she liked Mark and that she was obsessed with him and wanted to get with him. Then I wanted to spit in her face. And scream and say, "Fuck you, you stupid bitch. He's mine." And he wouldn't want your sorry, ugly ass anyway, bitch. But I didn't. Instead, I said, "Oh, well, I went out with him and I dumped him." I'm such a bitch. I feel like he's mine now and I hate that girl. June 26, 1997. 5:34 a.m. Well, I saw my Mark again. Goddess, he is so fine. Me and Chrissy went to downtown Wednesday night. There he was, my handsome Marcus. He gave me this evil smile and laughed, then ignored me. Me and Chrissy went back later with our black kittens. I named mine Kale Mark Legend Marquez. Chrissy named hers Batcat. He saw my kitten and said, "I want one. He looks so good." He was wearing a black suit with a red shirt under it. His hair was short and reddish brown, and he had some eyeliner on with black lipstick and white powder. Every day, he seems farther out of my reach, where I'll never get him back.
I would say pining for Mark, trying to get him back, was probably somewhere around like 2 to 3 years. After I kind of realized like nothing was happening with Mark, and I also knew like he was dating other people. So, you know, maybe if I meet other guys or get interested in other guys, I can move on too.
October 15th, 1997, 11:51 p.m. I'm happy. I'm finally happy. I took Tim to the Mission Inn. I gave Tim a back massage, and then we walked over by the shrine. It's so beautiful. Everything was perfect. We stood against the rail as the night got darker and darker, and the city lights glowed. A cool, soft breeze blew through my hair. And I could feel his dark, intense eyes watching me. We talked about him being a psychic vampire. He said he was going to drain me. I looked and smiled softly. "You won't drain me." "What makes you think I won't?" "I just don't think you will." "Why?" "I don't know. I just don't think so." "You know you're challenging me right now, right?" "I guess so." "How bad do you want to be drained?" "Do you really want it?" "I don't care." "Fine, I'm going to do it then." "Good, do it." "Do you know what you're asking for?" "If you're going to do it, do it." "How bad do you want it?" "I don't care." "Fine, close your eyes." I could feel the pale moonlight on my eyelids and the breeze. Are your eyes closed? Yes. No, they're not. Yes, they are. Okay. He pulled me slightly towards him, and I felt his lips touch mine, softly at first, and then with increasing intensity. And he held me, and I felt so safe, happy, and loved. He said, "See?" And you didn't feel anything. And I said, "Oh, I felt something." You should do that more often. And with that, we left. Then he said, "So, can I drain you again later?" And I said, "Sure." Anyways, we went back to the Gothic Circle and saw Mark. He looks so shitty. He had a black afro and no makeup. So anyway, he was looking kind of bad, doing drugs and partying all the time, which made it a little bit easier to pretend I didn't care about him anymore. But inevitably, even when I'd moved on with a new guy, Mark was always right there in my mind, and sometimes in other unique ways. February 6th, 1998, 2:13 a.m. I just lost my virginity to Jason. I love him so much, and guess where? At Mark's house. My love, my soulmate. Isn't that odd? It hurt, but then the pain went away. I bled too, I think on Mark's bed. He's going to be mad at me. I got there because Jason and Trisha came and picked me up around midnight. When I got there, Mark did a line. I thought I was going to start crying. He said he quit that shit, and then he did it, and his eyes got all watery, and I just wanted to smack him and go, "You promised," but I didn't. I just gave him sad eyes. He said, "Don't do that, Crystal. I'm sorry. I promise I'll never do that again. I'm sorry. Don't cry." And I was like, "Okay, Mark, it's just you promised." We hugged, and I didn't want to let go. I love him so much, and it hurts me to see him do that. Jason and I drank his rum and went upstairs and had sex on Mark's bed.
I felt like kind of sad that it wasn't Mark when it was happening, but I really thought I liked Jason at the time and that that would somehow work out. But also after it was real awkward, like, "Hey, Mark, so that just happened."
February 6, 1998, I lost my virginity to Jason. But I still love Mark. I can't believe I did that on his bed. Oh my God. So after all those years of dreaming of my first time in Mark's bedroom, it kind of happened. Thank you.
And now there's more to the story in our postmortem, FIDE. We caught up with Crystal recently and found out that while she entered the goth scene in search of romance, she ended up finding a different kind of love.
I feel like we all had dysfunctional families or problems or abuse or whatever. Like, we all had things. My mom and dad broke up when I was pretty young. I think I was 9 months old. My mom had two other kids. My mom was mainly a drug addict. She did meth, and that was her drug of choice. And so we had to move a lot, or she didn't have jobs, so we didn't have the best upbringing. And these people were people I could talk to about those things. That kind of lends to why, like, a lot of those people are still my friends. I made these people my family. Like, they became my family that I didn't really have around. For me to have those friends and that community and make kind of like a new life for myself, really, was like a huge thing for me.
And what about Mark, the boy that dragged Crystal into the goth scene in the first place?
By the end of high school, like my senior year, we were just super good friends and we were both good with that. I mean, I didn't really have that same connection with anyone else. That was super important for my life. So even through my years with dating other people or whatever, he did stay one of my best friends and he stayed there for me. And through breakups and other bad things that happened in both our lives, we were there for each other and we're still best friends today. So I feel pretty lucky I got to keep someone like that in my life.
And this concludes today's tribute to Gothic romance, where we learned there's really only one thing worth saying to a psychic vampire right before he drains you.
If you're going to do it, do it.
To share the shame, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And don't forget to check out our brand new TV series, The Mortified Guide, streaming on Netflix starting on Valentine's Day. You can also buy it for download right now on Amazon. As many of you know, The Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia. And if your company would like to support our podcast, we'd love that. Email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Hadley Dion, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Catcher. This story was produced for the stage by Gemma Webster and David Blatt. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes. Big thanks to Lance Roberts Studios and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we're fragile, and we all survive, even if you didn't feel anything.
Oh, I felt something.